My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Tarrock is the largest distiller of grape spirit in Australia, supplying high-quality neutral alcohol and brandy spirit for use in fortified wines since 1930. And as the craft spirits industry has taken off over the last decade, Tarrock has increasingly been supplying distillers with the base alcohol to create products including gin and vodka. Now, in a milestone move for the company, it has turned its hand to the production of new make whisky. Using existing infrastructure and technology, Tarrock has the capability to produce new make single malt spirit in large production volumes, helping distillers supplement their existing whisky stocks and supporting the establishment of a blended whisky category in Australia. In this special episode of Drinks Adventures, produced with the support of Tarrock, you're going to meet Chief Executive Officer Jeremy Blanks and Sales Manager and Project Lead Greg Jackson. You'll get some insight into Tarrock's 90-plus year history of distillation in Australia and why Jeremy and Greg believe it can help the fledgling Australian whisky industry unlock its full potential. And in a fascinating aside, Jeremy tells us about the historic timber coffee stills that fell into Tarrock's possession some years ago, which could one day inspire the company to create a whisky brand of its own. Just to clarify, this interview was recorded in December 2022. So when Jeremy and Greg are referring throughout our conversation to things happening next year, they're actually talking about 2023. So in fact, they've already received and are currently installing their brew kit as the whisky project continues apace. Well, Greg and Jeremy from Tarrock, thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Thanks for having us, James.
Thank you very much.
Really excited to hear about this new venture into whisky. Take me back to sort of the last decade or so at Tarrock. I suppose that, you know, the craft spirits industry, it must have really evolved as a new market channel for Tarrock's output and Tarrock's customer base. Would that be correct?
Absolutely. We started on our involvement with craft probably in about 2016. We saw the emergence of craft distillation, obviously, particularly in the gin sector, and identified it very early on as an area that we wanted to understand better and get involved in. And it's, as you well know, it's come ahead in leaps and bounds in the last 6 or so years.
And you would have already been making grape spirit, neutral or otherwise, for other applications, including which would have been to supply to winemakers for their fortification spirit. Is that right?
Majority of our production in the last 90 years has been grape alcohol and grape-based, where we supply a lot of the fortified neutral grape alcohol and brandy spirits for fortified winemaking in Australia. So, yes, the neutral grape alcohol that we were making at the time, we produced a really nice, fresh, clean spirit that fitted beautifully into craft distillation for gin production and vodka.
And actually, just prior to us chatting, I had another watch of the video on your website, the video about your story, and it was talking about how you do actually, I gather, mature brandy in-house as well. So I guess that segues into what we're about to talk about, which is the new whisky venture, is that you already sort of had that maturation, you know-how happening at Tarrock.
Yeah, maturation and distillation know-how. Obviously, we've been distilling for over 90 years as well, and we have a large brandy program. Some years we get to put a little bit more down than others. Obviously, with grape alcohol and brandy production, we're very much closely aligned with the wine industry. And when the wine industry has a really good vintage, we can put more brandy down. When tons are smaller, we don't get the opportunity to put as much brandy down, but we certainly have a large program. And over the years, we've developed our own I guess, method for producing brandy specifically for fortified winemaking. And now we've been able to transfer that knowledge into our maturation techniques for whiskey.
And so when did you come up with the idea of maybe we should be looking at moving into whiskey?
Probably late 2020, early 2021. The communication we have with a lot of our craft distillation customers is there was a lot of chatter around the place about whiskey and what was next after gin or to complement gin. And whiskey was the obvious place for us to look, and gave us the opportunity to continue to work with those craft distillation customers that we already had, but also to diversify where we were playing in the craft spirits sector.
And what's been the evolution of, you know, when you made that decision to go down that path? Tell us about the research that you did in order to come up with the best possible offering.
That was a really interesting exercise in terms of the research. We thought there were two main ways we could go. We could do the sort of more formal research reports, buying the reports, sort of understanding what the research houses were telling was happening in whiskey, or we could get on aeroplanes and get in front of people in the sector and understand directly from them what they were thinking, where they were seeing the industry going. So that's what we did. Partway through last year, we did a trip through Tasmania, and also we did some discussions with some of the mainland producers just to understand what they were doing. And then we applied that to the established market information about the whiskey industries, particularly Scotch, of course, but also bourbons in the US. And one of the things that we identified very early on was when you look at the percentage of blended whiskies sold compared to single malts, the Scotch industry is dominated by blended whiskies in terms of volume. I think over 90% of Scotch is blended. And when you look at that in Australia, we're almost exactly the opposite. We're well in excess of 90%, which is single malt. So we saw that as our opportunity to get involved in the industry, to be able to develop some whiskies that would sit complementary to single malts in terms of helping the Australian industry evolve into a more diversified product range, but also that means looking at diversification in terms of price points and value for money.
Are you using existing equipment, the existing still that you had there for brandy production, or have you? Has this required you to get new kit?
Well, the current distillation system we're using has been dual-purposed. We do make brandy out of it, and now we're making whiskey from our continuous system. We have three different brandy distillation setups, so to speak, at our facility in Samuel Road. So we've been able to repurpose one of those as a continuous distillation for our whiskey new make.
And I read that, you know, for the time being, you're bringing wort in and fermenting that. You don't actually have a brew kit currently. Tell us how that's working. Can you divulge, you know, which partner you're working with there currently, and what's the sort of time frame to bring the brewing part of the process in-house?
We're currently working with a couple of different craft brewers in Adelaide to supply us with material. Due to the size of our system, we need a minimum run volume, and there's only a few suppliers in Adelaide that can meet that. It has been quite interesting working with different companies on supplying us with wort. We always wanted to ferment in-house. We feel that controlling the ferment from type of yeast used, combination of yeast, the ferment temperature, ferment time particularly, we really wanted to have control of that in-house. We have a lot of knowledge about fermentation here as well, and we wanted to employ that knowledge and skill base. So we really needed to work with someone close by who could supply us the unfermented wort. We'd get it in a timely fashion and then be able to ferment here, particularly keeping in mind that at 18 degrees as it's shipped, it's quite unstable, so you don't want to sit it in a truck over the heat of summer for too long. But we also realize that we want to be in control of our own supply chain. So we've actually purchased a brew kit and are expecting that to arrive early next year. It's on the water now. And from that point on, we're going to have 100% control of all of our supply chain and feed material. At the moment, we're quite restricted in just using single malt barley from our craft partners. But we see ourselves in the very near future being able to experiment with lots of different grains, different mash bills, and have control of our supply chain in that way.
I mean, it sounds like things have moved pretty quickly because if this was conceived in, 2020, 2021, you're already distilling and things have, proceeded at a rate of knots, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll get Greg to talk about the approach to style, but we made the commitment to invest in February of this year. We've already got a fair bit of whiskey down in barrel, and the first objective for us is to get our style right. And then what our investment plan says is that we'll make both new make, but also we will start to build a stock of matured whiskey so that we've got both options for the craft industry. And the style of the new make, and obviously translating into what we're maturing, has been purpose-built to complement pot still single malts in the maturation and style outcomes. So we're looking not to make a product that competes, but very much complements and allows craft distillers to grow the volume they can produce, but using our product, which is all about high quality value, so helping them with price point, but also very capital light. So it gives them a very rapid way to increase their volumes, which, as we know, are key in terms of supplying to major retailers, but also potentially to export markets down the track. So the way that Tarac works is once we make a decision to invest, we go very, very quickly to activate that investment. And this is a multi-million dollar investment for us. We are committed to a significant investment and continuing our support of craft distillation in Australia.
And what do you think a typical customer looks like here? Is it a range of different possibilities in terms of distillers that already making whiskey, already have whiskey maturing, but want to bolster their stocks and don't necessarily have the capital to invest in more equipment? Or is it, companies that are making gin and kind of want to diversify into making whiskey? Or is it sort of white label type, perhaps supplying the major retailers with a whiskey product that they can, put out as private label? Is it kind of a combination of all these types of things?
Yeah, it's definitely a combination of all of those things. The industry here is, I think, still very early on, although, obviously Lark have just had their 30th anniversary, so it's 30 years of the current generation of whiskey production. But in terms of the evolution of Australian whiskey industry compared to some of the other major players, we're still very, very early in that process. And so for us, it's about assisting the industry with diversity of material, helping the industry to be able to provide very high quality product at a range of price points, and it's about value without compromising quality. All very important to us in terms of preserving the work that's been done by the industry so far, but looking at where it needs to go in perhaps the next 10 years.
You mentioned that there will be, diversification of the types of whiskies that you're putting down and the types of grains that you can work with there. Maybe you can tell me a bit more about that. How wide will that be in terms of different grains?
Well, at the moment we're working with a single malt barley, a pale white. Obviously, as we are in the Barossa, we're in the middle of our own grain belt itself. There's a lot of different growers and farmers here who are playing around with their own grains. Either for food production or beverage production. So we have this amazing resource on our backyard, back doorstep, to source different types of grains, whether that be wheat or rye or different types of barley. As you know, we've got Cooper's malting facility just down the road from us in Regency Park. They're 30 minutes away. We've started developing a relationship with Cooper's about bringing grain in and having them malt our own barley. So there's this amazing opportunity just right on our doorstep to experiment with lots of different grains. And then obviously you have the York Peninsula, which is well known worldwide for the grain production. Initially, though, it's when we receive our brew kit, our focus is on getting our single malt barley style right in the first instance, whether that takes 3, 6, or 12 months. We're going to really focus on getting that first product to our standards. We've developed in the last 12 months, we've been doing wort fermentation and whiskey distillation since November 2021. We've been working really closely on getting the right ester and fruit profile for our spirit with the material that we get in. So we're confident we have that as a starting point, and it's just a matter of matching those grains with our yeast and fermentation profile next year to produce our first single malt consistent product. I can see us using lots of different grains and trying different mash bills after that, working with our customers on what their expectations are, what they'd like to see in terms of their mash bills and flavour profile. We have this unique piece of equipment in continuous distillation that proves that produces a lovely, soft, very fruit-forward spirit, and we've really catered and tailored our spirit to reflect that, where it's fruit-forward. The cereal malt is more of a backbone or an undertone in that spirit. We wanted to highlight the lovely estuary fruit characters that we're getting from our grain, and I think we've really managed to do that well in the last 12 months.
You've talked about, you know, the scale of blended whiskey as a component of the Scotch whiskey market, and how you see that's going to be where the growth kind of is for you and for the Australian market potentially. So do you have an idea, though, of what might be the most obvious supporting grains in blended whiskey in Australia? I mean, probably safe to say wheat would have to be in the reckoning, you know, being sort of such a big industry here.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. Wheat, and I think we also have the ability to develop our own style, an Australian style of blended whiskey. And whilst wheat is going to have a big impact in that, I still think single malt barley in a continuous distillation also has that opportunity to really produce and shine as an Australian blended style. And that's what we're trying to achieve here, is to give our craft distillery customers an opportunity to use a grain whiskey, such as a single malt or even a wheat whiskey, as a blending component, and really flesh out that Australian style of blended whiskey.
You've told me a little bit about, you know, the research that you've done overseas. What have been some of the biggest things that you've learnt through travelling to the likes of Scotland and you know, bourbon country in America?
Oh, for me, it's the quality of oak and the quality of oak that's employed and the impact of oak on a finished whiskey spirit. We're talking here about grains and our fermentation and sort of yeast that we're using. But when you look at the flavour profile, overall flavour profile of a whiskey, a lot of that is generated from the type of oak you used. And I think here in Australia, we have this amazing industry in the wine industry that's used oak for the last 100, 140 years and used it really well. And there's a lot of knowledge in the industry about oak and the use of oak in beverages. And so visiting particularly Kentucky and production of barrels and seeing how they're seeing the sort of materials they're using in type of different charrings was just eye-opening. Then to go to Scotland and look at their profiling and how they're handling oak was also immensely rewarding and knowledgeable.
And for me, it's a couple of things. Firstly, clearly with Scotch whiskey and bourbon, that they have very specific regulations about how you must produce the whiskey to be classified in those respective classes. Australia, we don't have those restrictions, and clearly regulations are very, very important. But as I mentioned before, our industry is still quite young, so we've got the flexibility to create our own style or styles for what will be considered Australian whisky, and that's an opportunity for us. We don't have the constraints that they have in those other regions. And the other thing is the importance of having options, choice and flexibility for the industry while we're evolving our style. You know, that we have huge opportunity here to experiment and develop and really push the boundaries on how we make whiskey. Always the important thing is having the consumer in mind.
What sort of oak do you have in your maturation warehouses there? Is a variety of different types that you're trialling, or maybe there always will be quite a wide array of different material there just to sort of give your customers a, you know, an array of different styles of whiskey to choose from?
At the moment, the majority of the oak we're using is ex-bourbon, single-fill bourbon barrels. I feel that with the type of spirit we're making, it's very fruit-forward. The single-fill bourbon really complements that style. We're getting some really lovely vanillin characters coming through. That tropical estuary fruit profile that we are getting out of our distillation column and yeast is developing really nicely in that single-fill bourbon. It's becoming quite a fruit-forward style, which is where we want it to be. Obviously, being in Australia, we have a lot of access to ex-wine barrels. We've been playing around with a few different samples or different types of wine barrels. We also have quite a number of different fortified barrels that we have access to, and even a couple, obviously, ex-brandy barrels. But the majority by far is our single-fill bourbon barrels. We have currently approximately 140-odd barrels down, about 25,000 litres at cask strength at 63%. We've put them down every 3 or 4 months, so we get a really nice maturation profile and timing of those of spirits once they mature in age. And it's been really interesting to see the different characters develop over time. In fact, it's been fantastic. It's very different to brandy.
You see that you know, the amount of whiskey that you're producing, that's just going to keep ramping up over time?
Certainly, as we put out in our own brew kit next year, that will give us a great deal of flexibility on the volumes that we can produce. Our distillation column is quite robust in terms of the volume that we can put through. And the brew kit and the way that we've designed the brew kit in terms of volume, we'll be able to increase production very, very quickly as we need to.
Now, will Tarik have its own brand at all of whiskey, or are you going to leave that to the other distillers?
That's a really interesting question, James, and one that we've sort of kicked around quite a lot internally. The answer is, in the foreseeable future, no. We very, very much want to focus on doing what we do with our great neutral spirits, and that is being a distiller to the distillers. Having said that, there is one caveat, which is that you may be aware we are the custodians of two old timber coffee stills, which were part of the TST business, and we acquired the property back in 2009. The stills were there. We believe one of them dates back to the late 1800s and the other to about 1910. Now, part of our longer term plan is to look at whether we can recommission those stills. If we can, they will be a genuinely unique piece of distillation equipment. We've only found one other place in the world that's operating a similar style of coffee still, and that's in South America, I believe, making rum. If we could bring those stills back to life, that may be an opportunity for a brand, because it is genuinely different from anything else that is produced in Australia. And we would see that as being twofold. One, to bring those stills back to life, but also as a way of potentially showcasing Australian whiskey into export markets.
TST, that was a company that was acquired by Tarik, I gather?
We bought the property, not the business.
Right.
So we bought in 2009, 2008, a property in the Barossa from South Corp, as it was back then, which they had consolidated over many years and many mergers, and it included the old Penfolds Stillhouse, the old Kaiser Stuhl Stillhouse, and the TST Stillhouse. And miraculously, pieces of equipment were still within those properties when we bought it. That included an old, well, when I say old, a 1980s era column stool, but also these old coffee stools that are over 100 years old.
Wow, that's really exciting.
Mm. They were manufactured by a company called John Dore and Sons, I believe, out of the UK and shipped out to Australia.
Fantastic, but that sounds like that's quite a way off to get them potentially operational, let alone, you know, figuring out whether to launch a brand off the back of it.
Yeah, that is a long-term project, and our priority at the moment is the new make and maturation program. This is part of a longer-term plan. So when we did our business plan for the whiskey project, we've looked at a five-year horizon, and as Greg has mentioned, we're very, very much in the priority of the style that works for us, our production volumes, maintaining quality and consistency, and obviously developing a customer base. So what we do with the coffee stills is in there as a project, but it is a probably more of a year two or year three project.
Will you also be offering neutral grain spirit as a product if people have a preference for using that rather than the neutral grape spirit that you already supply?
It's something we haven't considered at this moment in time. Our neutral alcohol production is very, very large. We'd need a lot of grain, feed grain material to run our high-strength neutral columns. We can produce somewhere between 90 and 100,000 litres of alcohol at 96% per day, so we'd need a lot of feed material. I guess our brew kit is not set up for that larger volumes. So, no, we haven't really thought about supplying high-strength neutral grain spirit.
What are your thoughts on, you know, the health of the whisky industry in Australia generally? There's obviously sort of some pretty tricky economic conditions, and there's also probably some issues around the industry being a bit undercapitalised, but you're, you know, obviously pretty bullish on where things can go from here.
Yeah, we take a long-term view of Australian whisky as an industry. So we believe very much that over the long term it will be viable and sustainable. To get there, though, it's really, really important that we maintain our quality and that we approach export markets with a high level of knowledge and, I guess, sophistication in terms of really understanding which markets are opportunities and working into those markets with a considered approach. Having said that, I think in the short term, the industry's going to see some pressure. Certainly, I think, as you mentioned, we're looking at increased costs of living, we're looking at inflation, we're looking at increased energy costs, which is one of the biggest inputs to production. So that's going to create some issues for whisky producers. And I think it's going to be a very interesting time in the next 12 to 18 months to see what happens with consumer trends, particularly around their sensitivities to price points. The Australian whisky industry has done an incredible job of pitching itself in that premium price point sector of the market. I think there's going to be some water that's going to go under the bridge to determine how important for sustainability it's going to be to have good quality Australian whisky at a range of price points.
Now, as we've talked about, there is a lot of expensive whisky on the market at the moment, but I am seeing that alongside yourselves, there are quite a few bigger players coming into the market at the moment. You know, you mentioned Coopers earlier, which is obviously going to be launching its own whiskey brand at some point. Austra Distillers, which purchased the West End brewery equipment from Lion. And then you've got, you know, Casella, which has just put in a second still at Morris in Rutherglen. And there's, you know, a few others down in Tassie, I think, as well. So there is quite a lot of investment that's happening at the moment. But, you know, you're sort of very confident that there is a market for what Tarek's going to be doing alongside these other fairly well-capitalised players?
Our business model is a little bit different. We're not looking at doing branded product. We're looking at being the distiller to the distillers and providing them with the material that they can then diversify their offering, but also to help them boost stocks of product under maturation to help them grow without having to make that investment. You made the comment earlier that the parts of the industry potentially are undercapitalized, and I think that's a really big issue. I think making the concept of weight making whiskey is very alluring, but the reality is, unlike perhaps gin or some of the other parts of craft, whiskey is very, very capital intensive, and it takes a long time before you start to see those returns. And that's one of the challenges I think we'll see for our industry, is that pressure on capital and how long you've got to have stocks in barrel, and you've got to keep putting it down every year. So every year you're investing money in your maturation program, and it's a long time before you start to see money out the other side. And I think that's something that's perhaps been a bit underestimated by the industry. We get a real thrill out of being part of the whiskey industry and part of the story. And there's just so much in Australian whiskey that's not yet done. In addition to the art of whiskey, we're doing quite a bit of work in the science of whiskey. We're working with one of the big research houses at just understanding what Australian whiskey looks like from a chemical profile point of view, Greg, so that we can then manage the styles we make for the industry by looking at their chemical or their analytics as well as their sensory. That's an opportunity we see for Australian whiskey is the science part of it. Yeah, that's all really exciting stuff. When we started our program, James, we knew that we had, whilst we've been distilling for 90 years and we know distillation intimately, we obviously had a gap in distillation of whiskey knowledge, and we've gone to the market both here in Australia but also overseas, and we're working with some world-leading whiskey experts to help educate us and our teams so that we have the greatest probability of success. So that's a really exciting opportunity for us, and as I said, it's a really considered approach to how we can do this so it's a success for Tarek, but also a success for the Australian industry.
And I gather that, you know, the two of you were both whiskey enthusiasts, you know, well predating this project.
I have to say I'm a bit of an amateur, but certainly very enthusiastic about it. My go-to whiskies used to be Japanese. I've found that they've become very expensive for the same product, so the value for money thing has for me is a bit lost, and I have to confess that I was always not a fan of bourbon, but the last trip we did to Kentucky, we got to try some medium to high end bourbons, and that has completely changed my view of bourbons. We were fortunate enough to through Greg, organise a behind-the-scenes visit into Buffalo Trace and got to have a look at some of their range, and there is clearly a lot more to bourbon than the sort of mainstream bourbons that we see. So more recently, it's been bourbon for me.
What about you, Greg?
For me, not so much spirit. My background is in wine, in the Australian wine industry, so my go-to has always been a glass of white or red wine at night. It's my preference. But in the last In the last 8 years, I've gravitated towards brandy, and then the last year and a half, trying lots of different whiskies and bourbons. And as Jeremy mentioned, I was never much a fan of bourbon, but being able to see or being able to taste some really premium, high quality bourbons and different styles of bourbon was eye opening. It's fantastic. So my palate is developing a little bit more in terms of spirit and becoming a bit more all round.
Great stuff, gentlemen. Well, I'm really excited to see how this all evolves. Sort of a milestone venture, I think, for the Australian whiskey industry. And I know who to come and talk to when I want to get my, my Glen Atkinson whiskey off the ground or something like that. We'll have to come up with a more catchy name than that. But how can people get in touch with you? We have quite a lot of distillers that listen to this podcast, so how can they get in touch with you and what are sort of the time frames that we're looking at here for when you'll be able to fulfil their requirements?
We have new make whiskey available now. If anyone is looking to purchase unaged whiskey directly from Stainless Steel, we certainly have quite a bit of volume available for sale. Aged whiskey, well, we have a program where we put down whiskey every 3 months into barrel. So we're looking at getting a good chunk of the first batches put into oak at 12 months in April of this year. So it's going to be quite exciting, first year of aging and seeing how they've turned out. They can contact myself through the Tarik Technologies website. Just type in Tarik into Google and my contact details will be there.
No worries. And we'll link to that from the show notes for this episode as well. Well, Jeremy and Greg, thanks so much and congratulations on the new project.
Thanks for having us, James. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, James. Been great talking to you today.